Good evening, everyone. The Honourable Manasa Sogavare, Prime Minister of Solomon Islands, the Honourable Milne Tazaka, Minister for Foreign Affairs and External Trade, His Excellency Colin Beck, High Commissioner of Solomon Islands, and His Excellency Rod Brazier, Australian High Commissioner to Solomon Islands, and Honourable Members of Parliament who are travelling to Australia. Good evening. I'm Jenny Hayward-Jones. I'm a non-resident fellow in the Melanesia program here at the Lowy Institute. In a previous life, back in 2003, I was a policy advisor to the Regional Assistance Mission to Solomon Islands. I fell in love with Solomon Islands then and felt very privileged to make what was, I believe, a small contribution to restoring peace and stability to the country. I think it is a country with tremendous opportunity and energy. And like all of you, I'm looking forward to hearing from the Honourable Prime Minister tonight about his plans for the future of his country. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my privilege tonight to welcome to the Lowy Institute the Honourable Manasa Sogavare, Prime Minister of Solomon Islands. The Prime Minister is now serving his third term as leader, having served previously in 2000 to 2001 and 2006 to 2007. He was first elected to the Parliament in 1997, representing the constituency of East Choiseul. He's also served as the Minister for Finance and Treasury and Minister for Commerce, and when he was not in government, as Leader of the Opposition in 2000 and from 2007 to 2010. The PM has degrees in accounting, management and economics, and prior to being elected to the National Parliament, served as Permanent Secretary of the Ministry of Finance, was the Commissioner of Inland Revenue, Director of the Central Bank and Chairman of the Solomon Islands National Provident Fund, so quite an extensive history in finance. The PM is on his first official visit to Australia, a visit that consolidates the strong partnership between Australia and Solomon Islands following the end of a successful 14-year regional assistance mission. This evening, the Lowy Institute is hosting the PM in conversation with James Batley. James had a long career in Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and later in AusAid. Early in his career, he served in Vanuatu, Papua New Guinea and Indonesia. He was Australia's High Commissioner to Solomon Islands from 1997 to 1999 and returned to Solomon Islands as a second Ramsey Special Coordinator from 2004 to 2006. He also served as Australia's first Ambassador to East Timor and later as Australian High Commissioner to Fiji. He now works as a Distinguished Policy Fellow in the State Society and Governance in Melanesia program at the ANU. James and the Prime Minister will chat for about 30 minutes tonight, and then the Prime Minister has kindly offered to take some questions from the floor, so we'll be welcoming questions from you after 30 minutes. So I'll leave you to it, Prime Minister.
Thanks very much, Jenny. Good evening, everybody. Good evening to you, Prime Minister. I wanted to start this conversation just by asking you what the agenda for your visit to Australia is, what you're hoping to achieve while you're here.
Thanks, James. We came at the invitation of your Prime Minister, I guess, to continue to strengthen that relationship that exists between the two countries. And, of course, we actually invited him to come for the withdrawal of Ramsey celebrations. His Excellency came instead, so I came here personally to thank him and the people of Australia for the huge contribution to retaining law and order and restoring peace and stability in the country. So it's basically to continue to strengthen that relationship that exists between our two countries, and we had a very fruitful discussion this morning.
And I understand, so you've signed an agreement this morning between the two governments. What's that about?
It's the security treaty, just in case things go back to what it was in 2000. But we determined to ensure that the treaty will collect dust, that we will not allow the country to go down. So the treaty is about that. If anything, if we fall back into the situation we were in 2000, Australia will come back and assist us.
And what else will you be doing during the visit to Australia?
Well, a number of meetings scheduled. We started with the, of course, with the Prime Minister, leader of the opposition, and the government today in Canberra. And tomorrow we start the meetings with the private sector. And of course, the Solomon Islands community here in Australia.
Okay, so I think, I guess one of the things that most people in this room will know about, they will have heard about RAMSI, the Regional Assistance Mission to Solomon Islands, and the fact that that formally came to an end at the end of June. I was privileged to be in your country for those events, and we were treated with such hospitality and honour. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. But I wonder if I can ask you, what is your assessment of RAMSI of all those years, RAMSI and the role it played in Solomon Islands? Do you think it's made a sustainable difference?
Well, different people will have different answers to this, depending on what you want to see. RAMSI came to the country with specific mandate. And if you stick to the mandate, RAMSI has accomplished what it came to do in the country. Law and order was restored. The government machineries were back on track. Our police professionalism in the police force is up to the standard equivalent to any. And in fact, we are proud to say that it is one of the best police force in the region. So in terms of the what it came to achieve, to do, it accomplishes that mandate. And of course, the responsibility now lies, I guess, on the government and people of Solomon Islands to take it from there. The environment is there for Solomon Islands government and the private sector to take the country forward without being, you know, fear of that you, you know, distortion or afraid that somebody will attack you. So the environment is there for the country to move forward. That is, I guess, the duty, responsibility now lies on us to come up with the right policies to move the country forward.
Are there some things, some areas that you think RAMSI should have done differently or could have done better? You know, there were times where your own relationship with RAMSI wasn't the best.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, that's so we need some water, some water to cool ourselves down. I guess some of us were in Parliament from the word go when RAMSI, this whole idea about bringing RAMSI into a country came, and I think the first document that was circulated in the country was that the Iraqi kind of arrangement, that there's going to be a transition government in place, I guess remove Parliament and hand over, I guess, leadership after 10 years. That's the kind of arrangement that was discussed in the first place. So a full concept was distributed, and that got into the hands of politicians, and we were really uncomfortable with that. And I think after much discussion, that they did not go down that path. but to assist, to allow the government to stay on, but assist the restoring law and order and improve government machinery, governance issues and that. So so that's the first thing that I guess got us a bit really, really uncomfortable. And I think the way in which the whole thing was thought out and arranged. I think for obvious reason that this thing, you don't need to widely discuss it. Something is wrong in the country collapsed, you need to come and rescue it. So some leaders thought at the time that it could benefit from a more wider sort of discussions at the leadership, at the parliamentarian level, so that at least let us know what happened. We were actually caught by surprise that arrangement like this is now being put in place, and very soon a foreign force is going to land in the country. So there were feelings of really, people are really uncomfortable with that, what really is going to happen and that. But arguments, I guess, for and against Ramsey, the leaders who thought that we should really be addressing issues that really matters. And you kept talking about the underlying issues. Because what you see, the lawlessness and people holding guns just as a result of people dissatisfied with the system and what happened then. So some of us sort of see this, that, well, you're just addressing that. You would really do justice. You'd really be helping this country if you address the issues that these people are not comfortable with. And for that reason, they took up arms and did what they did in 2000. But that says clearly wasn't what Ramsey came to do. It has us a clear mandate. The addressing of the underlying issues is your responsibility. That didn't go down well with us in the first place. I thought, if you really want to help us, then that is where the assistance should really go. So we should really be addressing, if you look at the series of, I guess, the log of demands that was submitted to the government and later on the Malaitan, sort of the Gorkhanal faction took up arms and actually enforced the demands. They all were developmental issues. Nothing basically is happening in and outside of Honiara. Everything is happening in Honiara. So you see people coming into Honiara, intrude into people's land, and we have that problem. So a big decentralization of development to the other the provinces. You provide opportunity there so that people don't come to Honiara. So things like that. But that's not the clear mandate of Ramsey. It's to restore law and order, get the machinery of government restored, and that then the addressing of underlying issue is your problem. But I think as we progress through, I think it's because of this tough talks and that along the during the course of the 14 years, things improve. I think they listen to things that we are not comfortable about, and we improve it. So now, for example, Australian aid, for example, is now targeting economic growth. That's the right direction. That where we should really be going. It's the private sector that is the engine of growth, and the assistance they need to assist facilitate the growth of the private sector is the right direction any aid assistance should go. So slowly, I think we improve as we go. Yes, we had a grand finale on the 30th of June, everybody was, at last, yes. I think looking back, that was the right thing to do. The environment is here, and we had this assurance that we will help you to continue to develop the country with this 2016 to 2017, so 35 national development strategy that spells out how to move forward, and that will, that's where all of us development partners in Solomon Islands will it guides the way we take the country forward. So, there were differences in views and at that time, but I think at the end we can all say thank you that it went that way.
So, I mean, looking forward, I guess I wanted to ask you what you thought the big challenges are now for you as the leader of the government. I mean, you've talked about these underlying causes. In a way, what you're saying is they're still around. But so, for you, what are the big issues that your government needs to face?
The list will be very, very long, and I think we need 2-3 hours to talk about this. But first, I think to hold the country together, it's only when we go out to play soccer outside the country that we see ourselves as Solomon Islanders. Go back to Honiara. I'm from Choizo. He's from Malaita. He's from Western Province, and that. So that's a very big challenge for us. If you're not united, then of course addressing development will be also very, very challenging. We have on the agenda now of this come out of the demand by the people of Guatemala, and of course supported by other provinces here, of moving the country down to federal state government system. So that is one big agenda. It will either make us or break us. In Parliament, members of Parliament have different views. The province, the premise is just coming very, very strongly. Give us that, or else we will not accept that. And that. So, hold the country together, I guess, is one big challenge that we are facing. And it's not we are not helping ourselves by coming up with policies like the federal system that is basically dividing the country. So slowly we might need to work through that. Continue to provide, I guess, a conducive environment for investment to happen in the country. The country's strength, of course, lies in the resources that we have, mineral, fish, timber, and of course, acres and acres of arable agricultural land that is basically lying idle because of non-availability of land. 87% of the land in the country is under the customary tenure system. So you have to work through them. Only 13% is alienated, and that. So that's a big challenge. So we need to get the land reform up. Get land readily available for investment to happen. So that's a big one. The government is taking that on board because whatever land reform we come up with, of course, to recognize the intricacies of our customary land and customary land tenure system. Addressing corruption is a big issue for us. We know where we are going there. The legislations are ready to go through Parliament and to next sitting, and of course the first sitting in 2018. We should get all the legislation through, but of course we have to go through our colleagues and to get them to understand this thing, and private sector and NGOs and people are not really helpful as well, because you know what they're saying is that they get those legislation through so that let's lock them up in jail. You talk to the people who will pass the legislation, that's not you know, it doesn't help to move the legislation in Parliament, because you're talking about locking members of Parliament in jail. So I think slowly we get our colleagues to understand that this is not about you, this is about corruption. And so if you hang on to corruption, it will get you. So I think that message is going through.
You have a proposal for an independent commission against corruption?
The legislation will is aiming to establish that.
A lot of people around this town who could offer you free advice about it.
So we will go. We'll welcome this advice. And of course, the underlying issues that are still around, and we are working on a comprehensive reparation framework that will go to Parliament, and I think will be supported by legislation. The 5-volume of TRC report. The basis of coming up
reconciliation.
That's right. The report should accompanied by a comprehensive reparation framework to address outstanding issues. People have yet to be compensated for properties that they lost during the tension. Still, remember that. People who lost their loved ones and their during the tension. So it is a comprehensive framework that will go through. And once we have that in place, people should be able to know where we are heading in terms of addressing those issues. Right now, people are not really sure what is the government doing with all the demands and claims, and they're still around. So yes, we can go forever talking about the challenges we face in taking the country forward.
I wanted to ask you just a few questions before we go to the audience about how you see Solomon Islands' place in the world and in the region. So your foreign policies. You're an active member of the Forum, the Pacific Islands Forum, also a founding member of the Melanesian Spearhead Group. One of the issues that the MSG, the Melanesian Spearhead Group, has been very vocal on recently is the issue of West Papua, and you yourself have been very vocal. It seems to have caused quite a lot of tension even within the Melanesian Spearhead Group. Has that issue been worked through? Is there a way forward on that?
Yes. Well, going back to the question you pose, we just want to be good, I guess, member of the United Nations. The United Nations is established on some very fundamental principles. What surprises us is the fact that we talk about these principles and we do the opposite. When it comes to the issue of West Papua directly, this is clear in the United Nations that you respect the people's right to self-determination. People have the right not to be killed, not to be deprived of their land, not to be treated in any way that is inhuman. About 500,000 Melanesians die just because they want some rights to be recognized as people. that the United Nations should also care about. So in terms of where we are placed in the foreign policy, we just want to do the right thing and to be good member of the United Nations who believe in the principles that the United Nations believed in. Not only saying it, but also practicing it. And we don't see that happening. So there's a standing, a paragraph in our statement to the United Nations about the situation in Taiwan, West Papua, French Polynesia, New Caledonia. So where people fight for their rights, Israel, they get our support. Because they're not doing anything outside of the United Nations framework. What they are doing is what nations believe in as members of the United Nations. Right. So, yes, small though we are, that's the beauty of the United Nations, and you can stand at the world podium and express what you think about issues, world issues. We got rebuttals, the opportunity to respond to what we say, but that's what we believe, and we will continue to do that as long as these fundamental principles and that continue to be enshrined in the United Nations Charter.
Your nearest neighbour, Papua New Guinea, of course, faces one of these issues itself in the autonomous region of Bougainville, which neighbours your own island, Prime Minister. So there's some talk of a referendum taking place in Bougainville in a couple of years' time. But where do you see that issue going? Are you worried about that?
Very worried. Grey hair, you know. And get it straight from, from the horse's mouth. Discussions with the Prime Minister of Guinea. Referendum is happening in 2019. There are indications that they will not respect the outcome of that referendum, citing, of course, some agreements that they need to return all the illegal arms. Bougainville will need to demonstrate that they are capable of looking after themselves. Papua New Guinea was saying that they were pouring in about $500 million, a million kina, every year to assist the autonomous government of Papua New Guinea Bougainville to address infrastructure development, and they say that they did not see that happening. So with that kind of position, we are worried. We are worried, it will be interesting how the people of Bougainville will take that kind of that position that the government of Papua New Guinea is taking. So it is a issue that we also raise with Australia, that there's a possibility that things will go down. Like we had bad experience 20 years ago. When that happened, we had to accommodate refugees, people who fled Bougainville, and we had to feed them. And then not only that, but people lost their lives when the, the Papua New Guinea military came across hunting criminal elements and that. So it is a frightening thing for us. But active against discussion and communication is taking place. So we will just see the outcome of that. But from the position that the Papua New Guinea is taking, well, that's the position that the Papua New Guinea is taking. They will not respect the outcome of any referendum, if it is 100%.
Clearly, that's one to watch. Let me just ask you one more question. So, Solomon Islands has diplomatic relations with the Republic of China, with Taiwan. Nevertheless, mainland China, of course, it's the big diplomatic story, I suppose, around the world today of the rise of China. How do you balance that? I mean, what's your view about China's rise in the Pacific and globally? How do you manage that as a country that's you've got relations with Taiwan?
Well, our slogan is friend to all and enemy to none. When it comes to investment, trade, China is our biggest trading partner. Most of our logs go to mainland China. So when it comes to trade, investment, we open our arms to mainland China. And they come. They are there. They are investing in the country. When it comes to cross diplomatic relations, it's a more serious matter. It's a matter of principle. This is a, you know, they have the right to self-determination, that's not looked at positively by PRC. So that's how I guess we balance that. When it comes to diplomatic relations, we have that with Republic of China, investment, all other things. We open our doors to PRC as well.
All right. Well, look, we might, Jenny, just before we do, let me just ask you one more question. When you have a heavy responsibility as leader of the country, it's the third time you've been Prime Minister. What is it that gives you hope about the future of Solomon Islands when you wake up in the morning?
Wow. That we have good friends. Australia. Funny coming from me. Yeah, but that's history. We have friends. When we had the problem in 2000, they came. And of course, the country has huge potential, resources, and if we just put together the right policies, that country will be one of the envies of the Pacific. That gives me hope.
Great vision to finish on. Thank you very much, Prime Minister. Jenny, I'll hand back to you.
The question's just in the middle there, the man in the red shirt.
I'd just like to say something. I'm so pleased to be here tonight. And you and I have got older and fatter and greyer and all the rest of it. And back in 1980, we were much younger and handsome and less grey. And I joined the Foreign Fisheries Agency, and we, in this night, have not emphasized the honor that Solomon Islands as a nation has given to the maintenance of the Foreign Fisheries Agency and to the maintenance of that whole issue of the parties to the Nauru Agreement. The parties to the Nauru Agreement set up the eight countries of Melanesia and Micronesia, and now the honour of having the headquarters of the Foreign Fisheries Agency and being a member of the parties to the Nauru Agreement and having, until recently, the director, Transform Akarau, that has established Solomon Islands in the centre of the biggest tuna fishery in the world, and you have now moved ahead very tenaciously to maintaining this relationship with the rest of the world in supplying very good, sustainable food to the rest of the world. What I like to know is how you plan to expand your relationships around the world to offer them these services that you've done in maintaining such a good thing, even while your country was having a little bit of difficulty. I remember very softly, very calmly, giving a policy paper to David Campbell, who, as you know, is no longer with us, before he went to Nauru to establish the parties of the Nauru Agreement. But that has worked extremely well, and now you have a brand called Pacifical of tuna that everybody in the world knows is established under the Marine Stewardship Council, is labelled, and everybody should buy. And Solomon's has been at the centre of this, and that is an honour which you have maintained even during the times, early times, and the times of the trouble in the last few years. That's all from me.
Well, I don't know whether I understand that, but if you specifically talk about tuna resources and that we, I guess, established the, I guess, the first tuna cannery in the world, even before Papua New Guinea, they took over from us and had now, I think, what, seven or eight facilities, and we still have one. I guess the sustainable development of the resource in terms of, and then downstream processing, we would like to see more downstream processing happening in the county, maybe one or two more canneries. We're working very closely with the technical advisors on this, and they, when we came in, we were talking about canneries everywhere in the provinces, and that, and we were advised against that. No, you will run out of raw materials to have a, you know, viable chain of downstream processing plants throughout the provinces. And what the advice is maybe one or two more big ones, maybe one on Malaita, maybe one more in the western or part of the country, and that. So I guess going well in terms of developing that resources, we should, I guess, get away eventually from giving licenses to fishing nations that came, took the tuna and the employment with it to their countries, and they sell the tuna back to us in cans. We would like to have more processing plants in the country to provide more employment and like that to our people. And that, so I don't know whether I do justice to that question, but in terms of tuna, I think that's the direction we are going.
Prime Minister Greg, and then over here.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Greg Colton from the Lowy Institute. The security treaty today, which was signed, shows how close the Solomon Islands and Australia has become, and long may it continue. However, there have been reports recently of increasing concerns within the Australian intelligence community about a Chinese company being awarded the submarine communications cabling contract. How do you see the Solomon Islands balancing these security concerns from a regional friend with Solomon Islands' sovereign decision-making, which will bring economic benefits to your people?
Well, thank you very much. It's a matter that we, of course, also discuss with the Prime Minister this morning. When it comes to the security, I guess of the region, we acknowledge the important role that Australia played in the security of the region. And if Australia is threatened, we should also be concerned about that as part of important part of the region. Take Ramsey, for example. It is a success story because of this partnership arrangement. All the nations respect each other, and especially the important role that Australia is playing in the security of the region. So that the security issue was expressed to us, and it's a matter that we continue to have discussions with the Australian government to see how we can solve that. And we're comforted to the fact that the government is willing to continue to help us to talk through that that issue, and we should come out with a solution that is acceptable to all of us.
Thanks, Prime Minister. Samasi Singh and Papua New Guinea Consul General.
Prime Minister, let me comment on your speech. Having Ramsey just been successful in the region, PIF been talking about the regional force, maybe in disaster in other places. What is your view when you look at West Papua, Bougainville, and Caledonia on the horizon? Do we need a force, and how are we going to constitute that force, and where will it base? Thank you.
Thank you. That's a matter that is discussed by the leaders of Melanesia to have a Melanesia kind of a force that will act as a first line of response to any issue that comes up in our member countries. It is still being developed. It's still being developed, and we're yet to really see how it will shape up in the future. But that's a matter that is actively being discussed between the five members of the Melanesian spearhead group.
Thank you, Prime Minister Sogavare. I'm Camelia Webb-Gannon. I'm the coordinator of the West Papua Project at Sydney University. And I just want to say I think it's incredibly admirable, the stance that you've taken on supporting West Papuans in their struggle for self-determination. I'm wondering when you think the Melanesian spearhead group will make a decision about the United Liberation Movement for West Papua's bid to become full members of the MSG, and if you think that Fiji and PNG will end up coming to the party, so to speak, and supporting West Papua. And one more, has Indonesia tried to dissuade you from your support for West Papua, and how has that affected your relationship with Indonesia? Thank you.
Well, during my term as chair of the Malaysian Spearhead Group, we successfully elevated West Papua as observer to the in the group, and also elevated Indonesia as associate member. Because the application of West Papua is with the Secretariat now, and it's a matter that we will discuss in the, I guess, in the coming meeting that will be held in Papua New Guinea when I hand over the chairmanship of the group to Papua New Guinea. It's not easy because we really need to balance the position taken by countries, members, Fiji, and of course in Papua New Guinea have different views on it. And I'm talking about full membership of West Papua to an MSG. We can understand Papua New Guinea, they share the same the border, and so they need to handle this thing very sensitively. Fiji has a very, very close relationship with Indonesia on a whole lot of issues. So we understand their position. If this thing is put down to vote, it's 3-2. It's 3-2. But the tradition has always been consensus. So that's why I'm putting more gray hair, growing more gray hair now. I've been traveling around the MSG countries, trying to negotiate, trying to strike the appropriate balance. We came, I think we've now came up with some criteria that will enable us to discuss that application when we next meet in Papua New Guinea. When it comes to, I guess, a relationship with Indonesia, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding. I had requested through Ministry of Foreign Affairs for a face-to-face discussions with the president, but we were turned down. That now I will be handing over the chair, so probably that meeting will never happen. We handle, I guess, this issue of West Papua on a platform, a starting platform for Vanuatu, Solomon Islands, and New Caledonia, or the FLNKs. We painfully accept that West Papua is part of the sovereign territory of Indonesia, just so that we start from a platform that we all accept a position, Papua New Guinea, all five of us. It's from there that we'll try to to address the issue of our friends in West Papua, self-determination and of course human rights. When it comes to human rights, we make it very clear to the colleagues that's a matter that we all agree that human rights violation must stop in Indonesia. Indonesia has a duty to ensure that it respects the right of the indigenous Melanesians there are, of course, appropriate venue in the United Nations to handle that. But we are trying, of course, to get the support, and we are actively doing that now. We have expanded the coalition, the group, beyond Melanesia to also include Polynesia and Micronesia. And we're actively now working as well within Africa and South America. If we can get that support, we should be able to try to push that thing through to C24. That's the appropriate, venue to address the issue of self-determination. So the fight, I guess, continues.
We probably have time for one more, and I'm conscious the gentleman to my left has had his hand up for a while.
Thank you, Prime Minister. My name is James Cox, and I work on peace-building issues in the Pacific through a new organisation called Pacifica. And I'd like to thank you first up for your comments about Bougainville and how straight you were with it. I think that's an important issue that we need to look at. As a peace-building person, it's not an approach that's sort of well used or recognised in Australia or this part of the world, but what you were talking about today seemed to me very much that lots of the outstanding challenges in the Solomon Islands relate to peace-building issues, and that Ramsay was great at doing state-building, but peace-building is on the way. And if you're talking about peace-building and state-building, one of the other memberships that the Solomons has is of the G7 plus group of fragile and conflict-affected states. So my question is whether in the Solomon Islands government you're looking at exploring a peace-building approach at things in more depth, and whether you are looking to make use of the experience of your fellow countries in that G7 plus partnership and the other instruments that's attached to. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, peace building is an ongoing, a program in the country. I don't know whether we have something to offer to other countries on what is happening in Solomon Islands in terms of peace building, but we're working very closely, of course, with the United Nations to address the various aspects of peace building. Very much targeting development issues. If we go to the very root of the issues that brought the country down in the year 2000, they are very much development issues, and people are not given the opportunities to actively participate in development and that. So it is very much that. People looking from outside, of course, are saying that we are not, involving enough women in the important decision-making positions and processes. That's a challenging thing. This is viewed in different ways within the country. If you discuss the issue of women, they're I guess the rightful place is in the kitchen. They said that. But we have one woman in parliament. We beat the recent elections in Papua New Guinea did not retain one woman. Yeah. We have one in our parliament, I think there are, lessons to be learned, and if there's any lesson that other countries can learn out of what we are doing in the country, we would love to share that.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister, and to James. I'll just invite Michael Fuller-Love, the head of the Law Institute, to come and give a vote of thanks. Thanks, Michael.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to move the vote of thanks to all the participants today, to Prime Minister Sogavare, to James Battley, and also to Jenny Hayward-Jones, our valued colleague whom we miss very much now she's living in the UK. It's great to see you back at Bligh Street. Let me thank James Battley, who of course was Special Coordinator in Solomon Islands, I think between 2004 and 2006, one of the great jobs I've always thought in the Australian Foreign Service, and a great public servant who I think chaired the discussion today with great intelligence. And finally, let me thank you, Prime Minister, for doing us the honour of visiting us. I have a personal interest, as some of you know, in this topic. I visited Solomon Islands in the mid-noughties to examine Ramsi for a paper that I was writing on lessons that could be drawn from Ramsi for other international interventions, a paper that I called The Testament of Solomons. And it was my first visit to your country, Prime Minister, and I was really struck by the physical beauty and also by the personal qualities of Solomon Islanders. And I mentioned to the PM that I went to Honiara, but also to Malaita and to some other parts of Solomon Islands. And quick as a flash, he said, that's good, because the real Solomon Islands is outside Honiara. And of course, this is something that Australian politicians say about Canberra all the time. We were lucky to hear the PM talk about, and James talk about, Ramsi, about the relationship between Australia and Solomon Islands, which I think has been enormously deepened by the Ramsi experience. And there are many, many hundreds and thousands of Australians, and whether they're police or officials or soldiers or other Australians, and many, many thousands of Solomon Islanders who've had a lot more positive experiences with each other as a result of Ramsi. And I hope that both of our countries can use that as a platform for an even closer relationship. We also heard the PM talk about the challenges that he faces, from national unity to corruption to truth and reconciliation. He took our questions on Bougainville, on geopolitics of PRC and ROC, on West Papua and other issues, and only reached for his water on one or two occasions. So PM, thank you very much for doing us the honour of visiting us. And ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Jenny, James and the Prime Minister. Thank you very much.